This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome to this week's 45th podcast. I'm here this week with Suraj. Hey, Suraj.
Hey, Susan. How you doing?
Not too bad. Better than a soybean farmer in the States right now.
Or corn. Or any Iowan, basically.
You know, I was going to say better off than anyone who needs to buy like a washing machine or anything made of steel or anything made of Chinese goods. Which
basically any American.
Yeah. Basically, if you buy stuff, you got taxed more this week. And we are, of course, talking about the trade war. The, I would just say renew, but it's more like firebombed, exploded tariff exchange going on right now. Because sort of the backdrop of the past, what, like a year now, has been that China and the U.S. have been trying to renegotiate a trade agreement.
At least.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it does not seem like things have been going very well. Or at least at the last minute, according to Trump, China decided to try and pull out. And he didn't like that very much.
Well, and to President Trump's credit, at least he didn't sign a bad deal. Of course, it could have been much, much worse. And, you know, I think there are many. This is an interesting subject because
To his credit, at least he didn't sign a bad deal. So you're in favor of tariffs?
No, I'm in favor of President Trump not making things worse for the United States by locking us into a bad deal with China. I think that kind of means
that you're in favor of the tariff approach. So,
well, the thing is, and this is an interesting way to look at it because I don't know how Trump could really go about doing this without imposing tariffs on Chinese goods.
The same way we've negotiated trade agreements for, well, a long time now.
But we've never negotiated with China like this. And China is not really, I would say, a good actor here. See, most countries that we actually work with are actually working in good faith. You know, China's only concerned about expanding and cementing their own power on the world stage. And, I mean, Xi Jinping, he rules with impunity. I mean, the Communist Chinese Party, or the Chinese Communist Party, I should say. You know, they have a complete grip on power. And it's not like there's an election that they have to worry about.
Here's my question for you then. I guess if you're in favor of Trump taking a hard line negotiations, I don't see how you can separate that from also being pro-tariff.
Well, here's the thing. And I think there's a practical, nuanced way of looking at it. Because, say, Trump slapping tariffs or raising tariffs from, like, in this case, he's raised tariffs from 10% to 25% on a total of $500 billion worth of goods coming from China. What's interesting here is if he did this, say, for example, against Canada or Mexico, which he did with respect to the renegotiating NAFTA, that's a little bit too much because Mexico and Canada are actual allies. They're not China. China is a currency manipulator. They're trying to subvert basically every trade agreement that they've ever locked into. The World Trade Organization, which an agreement that was signed between all the nations, it mandates in one of the pieces of one of the articles that basically each country has to adjust their legislation to apply or to adjust to the World Trade Organization. And so China believes that is basically in violation of their sovereignty. So they don't really get into that. So you're not – China is a completely different animal.
Well, so there are some differences there. I think I would actually downplay the qualitative differences between them. But there are certainly some trade issues with China that are not present in other countries. My opposition has to do with the fact that tariffs don't work, as opposed to the political opposition of we should only tariff our enemies.
Tariffs only work insofar as to get another party to the negotiating table. And that's where
– Tariffs only work as economic chicken. Is what you're saying, if they work.
Well, it gets them to the negotiating table, just in the same way that Obama approached the Iran nuclear deal by sanctioning them and trying to get them to the negotiating table.
So I find the conflation of sanctions and tariffs to be kind of problematic in itself. But what you're describing is basically like a game of global Rochambeau, where each side kicks each other in the nuts as hard as they can, and whoever blinks first gets the worst deal. Like, that's kind of what Trump's trying to do right now. And the idea that can have a good outcome, I am, on a theoretical level, extremely skeptical. Now,
Trump shouldn't back down, though. I mean, it would be a huge sign of American weakness if Trump backs down to China now. I mean,
maybe he should have picked a fight in this way.
Well, how do you fight China? I mean, what's the other solution? I mean, do you use military force? Do you impose sanctions?
Whoa. So I think that I don't want to remotely conflate the use of, like, kinetic force, like military force, with a trade dispute here. I mean, the whole point of the modern international order is that you don't use force to negotiate a trade dispute. One of the points. And they're...
Well, not if it's Star Wars The Phantom Menace.
But there are more tools in the basket than tariffs. In fact, no other country, like in recent times, that's not a tool that everyone's been going for because they don't work. And what we have right now is Trump playing, again, economic chicken, and he could drive the economy off a cliff. So... for a lot of reasons, it seems misguided to me, but I am very skeptical that it's going to have the outcome that he thinks it is. It's worth pointing out, though, that Trump is not being necessarily on an island here. There's actually bipartisan support for what he's doing.
Yeah, it's I mean, and that's the thing I was trying to
misguided
allude to earlier.
Bipartisan support.
I mean, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, two probably the furthest left Democrats running in the 2020 Democratic primary, are, I would say, the most economic protectionist candidates in the race, and they probably stand with Trump on his kind of hawkishness with China. And Bernie Sanders and Warren have spoken to farmers in Iowa. And basically the idea here, and this is why it's becoming an issue in the 2020 Democratic primaries, because Iowa is the second, it's second in the nation in terms of producing and exporting corn, soybeans, pork, and eggs. And they're the nation's leader in ethanol production, which is, for most people who don't know, is a biofuel additive used in gasoline. So think of, you know, what runs your cars, what runs, you know, the gasoline that you pump into your house for heat. And a lot of that goes to China. I wouldn't say all of it, but a significant percentage. So, yeah, it's definitely an issue that I don't feel Democrats are as well equipped to handle. I think Joe Biden has probably done a pretty horrible job of addressing it. He sort of downplayed the influence, or I should say China's role in all of this, because.
So, I mean, the idea that the reason that we're seeing this, because Trump's position now is basically a left wing protectionist, anti-free market position. That's why there's overlap here.
Well, populism doesn't, I don't think, I mean, this is a populist position.
This is an anti-free market position is what it is.
Right.
And Trump's all in favor of that. In fact, his tweets this morning were basically indistinguishable from like North Korean propaganda. My favorite was the one that said, our great patriot farmers will be one of the biggest beneficiaries of what is happening now. Hopefully China will do us the honor of continuing to buy our great farm products. But if not, your country will be making up the difference based on a very high China buy. Basically, he's going to have a planned economy now where instead of China and the free market buying American agricultural products, the U.S. government will buy them and ship them off to other countries to, I don't know, end world hunger or something.
I'm not 100% sure what's going on here. I mean, I think what's interesting you're seeing here is that from Republican Senators Joni Ernst and Chuck Grassley, both who represent Iowa, they're being bombarded with calls right now from farmers who don't know what to make of these new tariffs. And I think what we're going to see here is that there are going to be more calls probably from Republicans than there will be from Democrats to end this trade war. And I mean, Trump's going to do what he thinks is best for the country, and that's not going to sit well with most Americans, because everybody has a different, you know, priority of what will help the country the most. But this is kind of what he ran on in 2016. If it wasn't immigration, it was on trade and being tough on China.
Yes, he has definitely run on that, but his implementation is terrifying. I mean, this is not something where we can be comfortable that, you know, it'll probably work out in the end. He could actually blow up the economy through this. That's not like a hypothetical. It's a very, very real threat. He right now is positioning the U.S. to say, oh, we're so strong that we will survive longer than you will. China will break first from pure pain. Well, there's pain being thrown out on both sides while this goes on.
Yeah, and that's the thing here is, you know, Trump has established a pretty formidable economy in his 2 years. Of course, it's
He has not changed the trajectory whatsoever. Trajectory has not changed one iota.
He's not done a lot of burdensome regulation that's in Wall Street.
A massive tax cut that has all the inertia from that has already gone out.
Republicans, for some reason, that was their priority above immigration, above trade. It was getting the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. I just am trying to basically illustrate that what's happening here with this economy is if it's certainly better than obviously the recession. I mean, it's obviously not just Trump who's done it. Obama under 8 years, there was a lot of stimulus money that was put into it. Unemployment numbers are certainly down. GDP growth is up at over 3% under 2 years of President Trump as opposed to 8 years of Obama. But if you're looking at
we're at a market peak and we're about to crash.
Well, that's what I'm getting to, is that with the trade war, Trump risks all that. And I think Bill Maher has said it probably best. And that's and I'm not saying best as in I agree with him. I'm just saying this is probably the strategy that I think a lot of Democrats are sort of or sentiment that they're harboring. And that's if the economy crashes, which it very well could, Democrats will probably win election in 2020. And they might win down the ballot. They could, I mean, I don't think they could win the Senate, but they could certainly keep the House and get the presidency.
They could once again inherit the ruins of an economy that's been trashed by a Republican president. That could, in fact, be what we're looking at. But here's a question for you. And I keep going back and forth on this one.
Sure.
Does Trump believe the nonsense he says about what tariffs are?
I think so. Trump has been pretty consistent on.
That's not the same. Does he personally? Does he actually? So Trump, what Trump says that tariffs are being paid by China. That's a lie, and Trump repeats it all the time. By now, he has to have been informed that China's not paying a damn dollar of those tariffs, and yet he keeps saying it.
Well, I mean, I think it goes both ways. I think China and Americans are paying for it, and it's hurting both countries pretty badly. I mean, but also
no. What do you mean by pay though? Like the tariffs themselves are paid by the domestic side. China's not paying anything.
I mean, I don't know where you're getting that information. I honestly don't know how all of. I understand that because tariffs are being implemented here, you're raising the prices of goods, and whether China pays for it, I can't prove that they are.
Well, this is how, I mean, where is the money actually coming from? Like the actual, not talking about like the bigger picture, like economic effects. I'm talking about the actual tariff money that's coming domestically. But Trump keeps tweeting things like, this money will come from the massive tariffs being paid to the United States for allowing China and others to do business with us. I mean, he goes on and on like every morning now talking about how China's paying massive tariffs to us and literally not a dollar of that's being paid by China.
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea where Trump is getting that. That's the only thing I'm kind of stumped on is it's like when Trump says building the wall and we're going to basically have Mexico pay for it through basically, you know, getting that trade imbalance figured out.
But he's not even saying so for the wall thing initially was Mexico will pay for it directly. Then he changed. And it was like Mexico's going to pay for it for the renegotiated NAFTA. Okay, that's also still false, but like you can see the argument being made is it's not literally being paid by Mexico. For the tariff thing, he always says it is China paying the tariffs, which is just flatly untrue. I mean, I think I fall on the side of he knows he's lying, but it's a tough call.
Well, that's the thing is like I like to salute to the god George Costanza, who in an episode of Seinfeld infamously said, it's not a lie if you believe it. So these are that's why I say that Trump honestly believes what he says to be true, because I don't think he knows the difference at the moment. And that's the main criticism.
How scary is that?
Okay,
so what he's doing now is he's taking a massive effort at reshaping American economic and foreign policy while he's at it by imposing trade, like tariffs, making trade wars happen, and has not a tiny bit of understanding of what he's actually doing. Like, that's a recipe for blowing up everything.
Well, that's the thing. And that's the thing about trade wars. And I think this is where kind of Sanders and Warren are in line with, is that tariffs are good for an express purpose, in this case, renegotiating trade deals. But if you have an ongoing trade war, that's obviously bad for the country. And that's kind of where, you know, that economic protectionism comes in, because if you're trying to, all right, let's look at the trade imbalance here. So the trade deficit with China in 2008 was north of $600 billion.
That's what Trump says it is, but he's lying.
No, this is from like Market Watch. This is not.
No. Trump's numbers are not true. And also, okay, there's two issues here.
You're not letting me finish my point. Yeah. I'm saying that the trade deficit was cut in half under Obama because you had the Great Recession, so naturally demand went down. There wasn't really any trade deal that was negotiated between the U.S. and China during that time. The most that you got was the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which actually never came to fruition because it was voted on. And then as soon as it was, Trump came into office and scrapped it. But the TPP China was never involved in TPP. So it's kind of hard to say that would have impacted it anymore. So right now, our trade deficit with China is around about $350 billion at the moment. And tariffs in Trump's mind seems to be the way of getting that back down to zero and maybe even a surplus for the U.S.
But why would we want that? Like, why is that even a goal here? The idea that
why would we not want a trade deficit?
Yeah.
I mean, think of how much money that the U.S. is losing.
Oh my God, that's not true at all. This is not even a thing. That's like Trump's like stupid economic rules. That's not how it works. Like, a deficit is like you give money to someone and they give you a good in return. Like, if you go and buy an orange and give money to the grocery store, yeah, there's a trade deficit between you and the grocery store, but you've got that orange. It's not inherently wrong for you to give money out and get goods or services in return. Like, that's not an inherent problem that he's fixing.
But there's also the problem with intellectual property theft.
That's a real problem. That's probably the biggest problem.
How do you quantify that?
So, like, okay, here's the thing, though. So where do you see Trump's trade tactics here helping with the IP fight?
It's a good question, Susan. I honestly wish I knew the answer here. I think what Trump is trying to go for, and I honestly think the extent of what he's wanting to do is to use tariffs. Like, if he was going to send an aircraft carrier into like the South China Sea to basically, you know, rattle the Chinese up a bit, maybe he could do that. I don't know. I'm sure there are a lot of people in his who think that might be a good idea in his administration. There's certainly a lot of Bush conservatives who think it's a good idea to use more military hawkish strategies to try to get the Chinese back to the negotiating table. But with IP theft, and this is just something that it's more of one of those abstract topics that I don't think a lot of people really understand that well. And messaging is key here, because as soon as you get messaging, as soon as you craft the right message, because, you know, Trump just talks about China and how we're all, you know, screwed over by this trade deficit. But if you can actually like get into the minutia and talk about where we're actually getting screwed over, I think there's a better chance that he might actually get some people in his corner who might have better ideas than, say, the people who are already there.
That's just a hope, though. Like, right now, there's no sign that Trump is actually capable of fixing the IP issue. And so far, he's also shown no ability to form an actual deal with China. Maybe that will change the next few days, but there's literally no indication we're heading that direction. In today's world, with Uber and Postmates and every other make life easier online service, there's one thing that hadn't been made easier yet, and that's getting your art framed, getting your pictures framed, getting things on your walls look pretty in a cheap, convenient, easy way. But now there's FrameBridge. They make it super easy and affordable to frame your favorite things, from art prints and posters to travel photos, to whatever snap you took on your phone while you were out on the last trip. Here's how it works. Just go to FrameBridge.com and upload your photo. Or they'll send you packing and you can safely send in your own physical prints and pieces. You preview your item online and check out every frame style and see which one you like the best. Choose your favorite or get recommendations. The expert team at FrameBridge will custom frame your item and deliver your furnished piece directly to your door, ready to hang. Instead of the hundreds you'd pay at the framing store, their prices start at $39, and all shipping is free. Plus, our listeners will get 15% off their first order at FrameBridge.com when they use our code 45th. When we moved recently, I had lots of old, cool pictures and posters and things from my life that I wanted to have hang on the wall that was not standard framing sizes. You can't just walk into a CVS and get something that's going to fit this stuff. And that's where FrameBridge has been amazing, because you can get a great frame at a great price that fits your item perfectly. So get started today. Frame your photos or send the perfect gift for weddings, birthdays, and special events. Go to FrameBridge.com and use the promo code 45th, and you'll save an additional 15% off your first order. Just go to FrameBridge.com, code 45th. FrameBridge.com, promo code 45th. Trade wars aren't the only battle that Trump was fighting this week. Today there was a hearing before Judge Mehta in the suit between Trump, who intervened, to block subpoenas issued by House Democrats to companies like Deutsche Bank seeking Trump's financial records. And he is now arguing, well, one, that the hearing should not have been fast-tracked, should have been slowed way down, which is his whole goal here, is to stretch it out as long as possible, keep the court from reaching a decision so that he isn't to produce anything in the meantime, whereas Democrats are trying to make sure that the courts move at as fast a pace as the courts can go, which is not very fast, and to have a hope of resolving this before Trump's election next year. So far, Judge Mehta, agreed to basically fast-track the subpoena lawsuit. He did not accept the objections from Trump's attorneys on this point. But the argument today was really disturbing for what Trump's personal counsel was arguing. And the judge asked him, so say, for example, if the president had a financial interest in a particular piece of legislation that was being considered. In your view, Congress could not investigate whether a president has conflicts of interest? And Trump's attorney answered that it would lack a legitimate investigative purpose. Trump's attorney answered that it would lack a legitimate legislative purpose. In other words, it is now Trump's personal position that it is inappropriate for Congress to ever monitor whether the president is engaged in corruption or otherwise abusing his office.
So that's kind of, where was this court? You know, so that's not at DC appellate level, right?
It will get appealed. This is federal court. Next up is DC Circuit. And
well, it hasn't been ruled one way or another yet, right?
No, he was not going to rule on the bench today. He's leaving it open for parties to supplement the record for the next, I think, like 4 or 5 days. And they'll issue a ruling that whatever happens will be immediately appealed. But the point is, the president now believes, or at least is professing to believe in court, that congressional oversight into the president is itself unconstitutional. In fact, the judge asked the president's attorney if Congress had the authority to launch Watergate and Whitewater, and Trump's attorney would not commit to that. He demurred and suggested that perhaps no. In fact, Whitewater or Watergate were both unconstitutional exercises of congressional power.
Well, that's a red flag right there.
This is all a red flag.
It's not. I mean, is he really Trump's attorney if he says it wasn't constitutional to investigate Whitewater?
I mean, he is Trump's attorney, and he's there, and he's making his arguments in court. So
that he must have like bit his tongue trying to say that. Yeah,
this is Trump's actual position now. Like this is why he is now intervening in this lawsuit, because he believes that there is no constitutional basis for Congress to check into whether he is committing corruption.
I mean, I find what's interesting in all of the subpoena issues is that I think Jerry Nadler, the House Judiciary Chairman, said we're in a constitutional crisis. withholding. I think he said it after they voted to hold Barr in contempt of Congress. What's interesting here, though, is that I guess I'll pose a question to you first, Susan. Do you believe we're in a constitutional crisis right now?
The slowest, most long rolling one yet in our history. Yeah.
So you don't think our system is working?
No, it's absolutely not working. Our system has failed to account for a party that is backing an authoritarian leader and not engaging in oversight.
So the president doesn't have a right to, say, invoke executive privilege on, say, something like the Mueller report or has he invoked executive privilege on his tax returns? I'm trying to remember.
No, he can't do that. That's not something he can do.
That's not really executive
privilege. I mean, he might do it anyway, but it's literally not something he can do.
But he's invoked he has invoked executive privilege on a number of subpoena requests. That's right?
So far, the only one he's like formally done so is for the Mueller report.
Okay. And that's what they're fighting on.
No, this is not executive privilege he's doing right now. What he's doing is saying that because Trump's argument is that because Congress wants to see if he's committing crimes, it's unconstitutional for him to do so. That Congress can never check to see whether the president's committing crimes.
Well, two faceted answer here. One, if the president was committing a crime, he could not be tried in a court of law.
So you're saying he can't be investigated for it? That's the whole premise.
No, that's not what I'm saying. He can't be investigated. That's where Congress can impeach him. And if they want to, the Constitution allows that. Now, if they were trying to actually try him on a crime that was not, say, for example, if it was outside of Congress's role to say, you know, actually go through, say, a criminal prosecution, that's very difficult for any court to try to proceed with, considering that virtually everybody knows who the president of the United States is, and getting a jury who's never heard of the president of the United States.
Wait,
let alone
no, that's not president. That's not what we're talking about, though. And that has anything to do with this current oversight issue. It's not. So the oversight is what Congress is there. It's a check and balance kind of thing, you know, like fourth grade social studies level here. They're not trying to have the president criminally indicted. They're trying to investigate and do oversight. And part of that involves checking to see whether Trump has conflicts of interest and any current policy issues he's behind, or if he's committing outright corrupt acts, anything that is absolutely within the realm of Congress. That's what that's supposed to be happening.
Right.
So what possible basis can Trump claim that it is improper for him to be investigated for a crime?
I'm not 100% sure. I think, I know there was a report over the weekend. I think that there were somewhere close to 80 subpoenas that the Trump administration either did not respond to or rejected outright from Congress. And we kind of knew this was going to happen as soon as Democrats took over the House, that they would use their subpoena power and try to get as many documents as they could. I think if the Trump administration or Congress had been acting a bit more in good faith, you probably would have not seen as many subpoenas go out. Because what would happen is Congress would ask for documents. They probably would actually have a negotiation session as opposed to straight up subpoena.
Yeah, that's what happened. They didn't get any. They turned
into subpoena. No, I understand that. And I'm not saying – I have no idea whether all of these requests, these subpoena requests basically were the first go-to versus say – I mean, think of where we are. We're in May. Think of how many subpoena requests have gone out. Do you think it's not at all kind of smell a little bit that they're trying to get these subpoena requests out so that they could be rejected and create a new storyline that the Trump administration is basically being obstructionist?
But they actually haven't gotten any documents. So you're saying they have no interest in doing oversight. They have no interest in doing anything about investigate Trump. They're only pretending to investigate, like, knowing Trump won't allow it. And then they're like, haha, Trump's blocking investigation we didn't really want to do in the first place.
I mean, these are the, I mean, it, the Democrats haven't exactly been...
Okay, no. How is there no good faith there? Where's the lack of good faith in any of this?
They want to impeach him right away.
Well, that's very much false, because look what they're saying. They're all basically trying to quash any talk of impeachment.
That's not true at all.
Yeah, look at Pelosi. Look at Schumer.
What are you watching?
Name one Democrat who's not running for president who has at all spoken favorably of impeachment.
Name one Democrat who is not
Pelosi. Yeah. There's a couple running for president who have made statements. But the actual Democratic base, Democratic congressional and Senate base right now, they are firmly against. It's too soon, they say. We need more investigation, they say. They are not rushing towards impeachment. All that has happened is that the oversight did not happen for 2 years because there are basically no Democrats that could do it. That's being done now. That's full stop all that's happening. And to claim bad faith in them doing the job that Republicans should be doing themselves, I don't see it. I mean, yes, there's political motivations. There always are. It's the whole point. The fact someone has a political motivation for doing their job doesn't actually make it illegitimate or wrong. The system is designed for people to have political interest and to act on those. And in this case, to act on it by checking to see if the president's corrupt.
I think you got those partisan sunglasses on too.
Wait, how is this partisan? Okay, look. So whoa. So you think it's inappropriate to check to see if the president's committing corruption?
No, I don't think it's inappropriate.
Then
but,
what is inappropriate in what the Democrats are doing now?
The Democrats have a vested interest in putting out as many subpoenas as they can to try to get the Trump administration to not work with them. If they were working with them behind the scenes.
They were. They've been working behind the scenes like this for the past 5 months. Most of the time, the subpoenas are new.
Where?
Kushner.
Give me one.
Kushner. And then they tried for Don Jr. They negotiated for weeks until he finally backed out. Kushner went and testified on the Hill. Don Jr. recently. Don Jr. is the only one who threw up the brakes after negotiations were going on for weeks. And he finally said, no, that's when the subpoena happened. But they've been talking.
The White House that they're subpoenaing. They're subpoenaing every federal agency, HHS, the VA.
Yeah, that's the executive branch. And DHS. Trump is trying to stop all of that.
Yeah, because he knows that the Democrats are acting in bad faith.
Where is the bad faith?
The bad faith is that they're trying to basically say that everything that they're looking for political talking points going into 2020.
So literally you don't believe that Congress should do oversight.
No, Congress should do oversight.
Then how do you do oversight if you don't request documents?
I'd say the one thing that I could point to that doesn't look blatantly partisan is Richard Burr subpoenaing Donald Trump Jr. to testify.
Oh, that was so partisan. He did that because he got caught sharing Gang of Eight intel in the Mueller report.
Well,
this is his makeup. So literally the only action that you found legitimate that's happened in the past 5 months is the one action that's been done by a Republican in 3 years.
I mean, when 3 years?
No, well, two and a half.
I mean, from what I've seen so far, I think the subpoenas that we've seen coming from the Democratic controlled House has been viewed solely for political gain and not for actual oversight.
What I just don't think you have any actual basis for that claim, because the whole point of Congress is to request records, see what's going on, and find answers. They should not have to just take the word of the executive branch that everything is hunky-dory, which is what you're saying they should do, and that
nothing in the executive branch is hunky-dory.
So then why shouldn't Congress request documents and look at them?
I think the way that they're approaching it, though.
Name one. Specifically, which one?
The subpoena on, Trump's tax returns.
Why is it not appropriate for the United States to know if its president has conflicts of interest in what it's doing?
This is based on what I know, and that is, and I'm all for government transparency. I think I personally would like to see Trump's tax returns. But I think that Democrats going after his tax returns in this regard, if anything, stinks of just blatant partisanship. It doesn't actually sound like they want to get that. If they really cared about conflicts of interest, I think there probably would have been they probably would have approached it from a better angle.
What better angle is there? They tried everything they could. They tried requesting it from Treasury. In fact, the law says that at the Ways and Means Committee shall be given the tax returns a request. There was no sort of ambiguity there. The law says they ask them for them, they get them. And Trump's Secretary of the Treasury said no, based on no law that exists. So what else is left?
At this point, you got to let the courts decide. I mean, and that's, and that, this is where I probably disagree with you on there being a constitutional crisis, because if you have basically an impasse between the executive branch and Congress, you let the courts decide.
No, that's not the, like, you can't force the courts to play referee on every single executive congressional
interaction. Then who's the arbiter here?
Well, and historically, there's been a goal of avoiding that kind of conflict. You have occasional court spats that come out and get litigated, but most of the time, this stuff is worked out just between Congress and the executive branch. They negotiate.
Yeah, but I'm saying that they're at a complete impasse.
Yes, because Trump has refused to abide by any subpoenas.
So then you got to let the courts decide.
Okay, so you're fine with a president saying, I'm going to take a blatantly unconstitutional position, and I'm not going to agree to any oversight or to any of Congress's powers, and you're okay with having it take 2 years to work out because it's okay for Trump to break the law as long as he's
eventually held to account. I wouldn't say I'm okay with it. I'm just saying that's how our system works.
Well, that's how it's doing it right now. What I don't understand is how you can call that bad faith in the Democrats, though, because they're actually doing the only thing available to them.
Oh, I never said that Trump's operating in good faith. He's only trying to protect himself. But that's
well, How was the Democrats engaging in bad faith, though?
Because the writing has been on the wall for some time. The Democrats, their only goal here has been to impeach President Trump.
I think that's extremely factually untrue. Because if they were going to impeach him, why would they not?
They don't want to impeach him because, one, and I'm saying they haven't gone through with impeaching him, is because, one, there's an actual window here for Trump to get out of office without congressional intervention. But if Democrats keep the House beyond 2020 and they lose the presidency, which could happen, you could probably find an impeachment proceeding happen pretty soon.
So if they, I don't understand how you can say all they want is impeachment, but they don't want to impeach right now.
Because politically speaking, it would divide the country even further.
So they don't actually want to impeach. So they don't actually want to impeach. They just want to conduct oversight. Yeah. And if it, potentially later on, if
ultimate goal is to get Trump out of office, impeachment.
I mean, that's the ultimate goal of any political party, is get his opposition out of office.
No, I know, but
they, if they want to impeach, they would. They are not impeaching; they are trying to do further investigation, which is appropriate, whether or not impeachment's ever been uttered as a word in the context of the investigation.
Okay, just because they're not impeaching the president doesn't mean they don't want to impeach him.
Just because they say they don't want to.
There's a little difference here, huh?
Pelosi has outright said she does not want to.
Well, Pelosi has said she doesn't want to, but Pelosi doesn't speak for pretty much every other Democrat.
She is the speaker for the organization that would have to start impeachment
proceedings. Think of where Pelosi is an establishment figure. Think of the
We're just going in circles now, but the point is that they wanted to impeach, they would. But that existence of impeachment does not mean that it's illegitimate to conduct oversight. In which case, you're basically agreeing with Trump's attorney that Watergate and Whitewater were illegitimate because they were done by Congress that was interested in impeachment.
I don't know. I don't remember. I was a kid when Whitewater happened, and I wasn't alive when Watergate happened. So I'd have to go back and read up on it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what Trump is. That's his position, and God helps the courts agree with it. But it does not look like we'll be getting an answer there anytime soon, because the courts are slow as heck. And that brings us to Trump's personal attorney, our personal pro bono attorney, Rudy Giuliani. Have you followed his adventures in non-adventures in Ukraine this past week?
So he was going to go for a trip and then he ended up not, right?
Yeah. So I forget which paper it was, The Guardian maybe? Giuliani had an interview and he announced that he was going to go over to Ukraine to get evidence implicating Biden and his son Hunter in some kind of corruption-ish undefined scandal thing, and try to encourage the prosecution of someone or something related to the Bidens. And he told the paper, quote, "There's nothing illegal about it. Somebody could say it's improper." And he also said that Attorney General Bill Barr should consider opening investigation into Biden's ties to Ukraine. And Trump told Politico that it would be, quote, appropriate for him to discuss with Bill Barr launching an investigation into Biden.
Oh, man.
So what do you think? Is it appropriate for the president to direct an investigation into his political opponents?
No, it's not. It's never been okay. There always should be a separation between the White House and the DOJ. And I think it's inappropriate when he kind of talked about that on the campaign trail, about trying to basically direct his attorney general to investigate one thing or the other, or to get even directing, say, like Don McGahn to, you know, get Mueller fired, that whole thing in the Mueller report. I don't know the extent of what Hunter Biden's ties were to the Ukraine and whether he actually did anything shady under when Biden was vice president, and whether that impacted policymaking during the Obama administration. Probably should be looked into, but here's the thing. And I think there's a lot of smoke and mirrors here, because an investigation is happening doesn't mean that something was illegal here or something, or like
what we're not talking about. What, so first we'll get to that in a second, but the question is whether it's appropriate for Trump to be doing this.
I agree. It's not appropriate. It's not appropriate to direct his attorney general to do it. If the DOJ on their own, yeah, wanted to do it, then fine.
But that's not what Trump thinks. I mean, this is what I mean by the slow roll constitutional crisis. This is a constitutional crisis on its own, added to the dozens of others constitutional crises going on. And because there are just, that's just how things work now, it's not being identified as a crisis it is. But because you...
Well, I don't know if presidential, doing something that's not appropriate is considered a constitutional crisis right off the bat. I mean... And I guess in this case,
the frog boiling president. So again, I agree that there are shades of gray here, and that there are obviously varying levels of improper conduct. The problem is that what Trump is doing is blatantly unconstitutional and inappropriate. And because he's done so many similar actions, the impact of it is lessened. But this by itself is clearly inappropriate and the start of a constitutional crisis. If the president is using his power as head of the DOJ to launch investigations into his opponents, that is the end of democracy. But
investigating your political opponents using weaponizing the DOJ to do that, it probably would constitute it as a constitutional crisis. I haven't heard, besides that political report, which, by the way, I don't know if he said it. I mean, I'm sure he was captured saying that on the record. But it's like, if you see it that's reported, but you don't hear it coming from Trump's mouth specifically, are you so sure? Are you 100% sure it even happened? Because there have been so many times that, you know, Trump has said something and it's been mischaracterized in reporting. And then, you know, you got to have, then he calls the reporters fake news. And then we have this vicious cycle where pretty much, you know, Trump could say anything with impunity. And, you know, we just kind of go through that vicious cycle over again.
That sounds like a crisis to me. But because Trump has raised, and Giuliani have raised the question and put this allegation out there, it's worth exploring what the whole Biden-Ukraine thing's about. Spoiler, there is no evidence whatsoever of any improper conduct by Biden or his son. But it goes back to 2016 and to anti-corruption initiatives that were going on in Ukraine. There was a new head prosecutor put in Ukraine, Viktor Shokin, who decided this whole anti-corruption thing wasn't just for him, really, and dropped the ball on it. So the efforts that are being made to fix Ukraine's corruption problem, which was huge, started stalling out. And that's when not just the U.S., all Western powers got involved and were trying to convince Ukraine this is not working out. Biden was appointed to be sort of the point man for that from the U.S. end, and he was over there. And what ended up happening is Ukraine was told, get rid of this prosecutor or you're going to lose out on loans, cooperation. And Ukraine said, okay, and fired Shokin and hired a new head prosecutor. Now, the alleged scandal is based on the fact that Biden's son, Hunter, was on the board of a company over there called Burisma. I think that's how it's pronounced. And like everything in Ukraine, there were suggestions of corruption and being involved in the company. And that's kind of it. That's literally the full extent of the connections there. Now, what Giuliani has come out and claimed is that Shokin was investigating Burisma and Biden for corruption, Hunter Biden for corruption. And that's why Joe Biden, vice president, wanted to fire him so they couldn't investigate his son. Mm. Now, that's all made up. There's zero evidence whatsoever. There's an extremely strong and robust record that the reason Shokin was fired is because he wouldn't do anti-corruption efforts. So what seems to have happened is that the current head prosecutor, Lutsenko, has decided to shore up his weakened position in the current administration by butting up to the United States and fabricating this conspiracy and trying to convince Giuliani that, hey, you want to convince my boss, the new president of Ukraine, to keep me in power.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's literally it. There's zero evidence whatsoever from anyone involved that anything Joe Biden did in Ukraine had anything to do with his son. And there's also zero evidence whatsoever that Shokin was even investigating Burisma in the first place, because the whole problem was that he wasn't investigating corruption. So yeah, that is the full extent of this so-called scandal. What seems to have happened is that Giuliani fell for this story from Lutsenko, you know, hook, line, and sinker, gave that interview when he's like, yeah, it's appropriate for me to go over to there and encourage them to investigate the vice president's son or vice president himself, and then realized he'd been played and canceled the whole trip.
Giuliani.
Yeah.
What are we going to do with you?
Prosecute him for FARA violations because they're blatantly obvious and there's no reason why he hasn't been already.
You can prosecute him under FARA?
You can. Like,
even though he wasn't... What? Based on what?
Not for that particular incident itself. No. I mean, the whole Giuliani situation, it's inexplicable how he's been doing what he's doing without once registering under the Foreign Agent Registration Act. Because while representing the president for free, he has also represented numerous foreign governments, numerous high-profile foreign business interests, and engaged in what can only be described as lobbying on behalf of those foreign governments, foreign interests, which means he should be registering in the United States and is not. So given, I mean, this is not like even a close call. It is very open what he's doing. And he's getting away with it because, you know, his number one client is the president, I guess. But the fact that no one seems to be reacting. Well, that's not true. I was going to say no one's reacting to this open corruption. Senate Democrats did send a letter to DOJ saying, look, please investigate all these things Giuliani is doing that look like FARA violations. Never heard back. Nothing more happened. And that's all they can do. So we now have a president who's lead counsel, who works for free, has his ear, and is traveling all around the world, acting as a shadow, basically a shadow Secretary of State.
Yeah, that definitely, I mean, the story totally stinks. I don't know what to make of it, to be honest with you. I mean, this is one of those things where, like, because Trump lost his fixer in Michael Cohen, it's like Rudy Giuliani basically filled his spot right away.
He forgot to
obviously, like, you know, cover his tracks and instead speaking to the media about it.
That's the thing. He doesn't need to hide his tracks. He knows he's not going to be prosecuted breaking the law, so why would he even try and hide it?
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. Is when you're dealing with the Trump administration and Barr as the attorney general, I mean, how likely is it that Giuliani would be prosecuted? Yeah. Now, if you want to look at, say, something like a different... say Southern District of New York. I don't know where Giuliani's based in, but I feel like that would probably be the one. I feel like that'd be the one court system or judicial.
But that's still the DOJ.
System. Yeah, I get. I mean, the thing is,
we have no independent prosecutor anymore. That's now gone because we cannot trust the DOJ to actually prosecute violations of the law that the president doesn't want them to do.
I mean, you know the law better than I do, since you are an attorney.
It's just another slow roll constitutional crisis. And the thing is, like, so this is not like a totally new situation. Giuliani's had these consulting businesses for a long time. Giuliani Partners and then Giuliani Security and Safety. But, like, what do they actually do? No one knows. He's consulting for all these foreign governments on, quote, cybersecurity and criminal justice reform. But what is he who is paying Giuliani millions and millions for cybersecurity help? When he can't even tweet out a link right.
I honestly don't know. This is above my head. I really, Giuliani, I think in terms of the best thing that he did for the Trump administration is get Trump to not sit in front of Robert Mueller.
Yeah. I mean, no, Giuliani, like, for all of his, like, some things he's not competent on, but he is, one, more capable than Cohen was, and two, really good at certain parts of his job. And three, he's good at making millions at having the president's ear. Like, what do you think really are the chances, though, that Giuliani has never used his access to the president to bring up any interest promoted by one of his clients paying him millions each month?
I would have to wager that there's more likely did than not.
He toasted that shit, basically.
For the most part.
So, again, this is something that would be great if we could have some oversight on. But given that oversight's no longer appropriate, we can't do that either. So we have no ability to know what our shadow Secretary of State Giuliani's doing all these trips abroad to Eastern Europe, to the Middle East, to South America. What his contracts with Brazil, Colombia, Ukraine, the Iranian opposition political group, Uruguay. Shoot, like, basically half the world at this point is paying Giuliani.
This, here's the thing. I don't really know much about how much money Giuliani is making and where he's getting it from. If he's working in the capacity that he is with the president, that's certainly that would be in violation of what, the Hatch Act?
It's in violation of a lot of things. That's the concern here, is that, like, he's literally openly...
The Hatch Act or Logan Act? It's one of those.
Not the Logan. It's a
or a emoluments clause.
I mean, there's so many violations here that are not, they're not even close calls. Literally, there's a contract report that, well, this has been reported on by the people who hired Giuliani. The contract says he was hired for lobbying purposes in Ukraine. Yeah. So that means he is currently breaking the law because he did not register under the Foreign Agent Registration Act.
I can imagine that if once the shoe is on the other foot, if there's a Democratic president and a Democratic-controlled DOJ with that, you could probably see a lot of prosecutions and indictments being handed out.
I mean, why should we have to wait for that to happen? Like, the whole point of having an independent DOJ is that
Not an independent DOJ. I mean, it hasn't been in a while.
Well, yeah, again, constitutional crisis.
I'm just saying that, you know, Eric Holder was held in contempt because the Obama administration was blocking Congress's attempt at oversight over the Fast and Furious.
Yeah, they did do that. And guess what? It just got resolved like a week ago. In other words, Trump is basically guaranteed to not have the courts resolve this issue before the 2020 election. So you believe what the Democrats in Congress have been doing now is illegitimate in their investigations.
I wouldn't say that they're illegitimate. I would just say that they're tainted in politics. So, and like, more so politics than oversight. I'm not saying that they shouldn't conduct oversight. I'm just saying that a lot of it is an attempt to make things look like they may not appear. And I don't think people should willy-nilly buy a storyline that the Trump administration is blocking so many subpoenas. Because
but they said they are. He literally said he's blocking all of them, and he is. And that so basically what you're saying is that even though you don't think it sounds okay what Giuliani is doing, it's inappropriate or bad faith for Democrats to look into it.
No, I'm not saying it's not inappropriate or – what I'm saying is that the Democrats are intentionally sending out subpoenas as the go-to as opposed to working with the Trump administration on some of these smaller issues that they could easily work on that doesn't require a subpoena.
Okay, here's some homework for you, Siraj. Mm-hmm. Find a subpoena that you believe was done in total bad faith without any legitimate purpose or pre-negotiation.
You got it.
Thank you for listening this week, and we'll be back next week to update on, hopefully, still not, the war in Iran. Hopefully.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. And you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.